This is Garden Talk. I'm Jill Nadeau. Glad to have you with us on the Ideas Network. We're talking about organic gardening with today's guest, Howard Garrett. He is the host of the nationally syndicated organic gardening talk show, The Dirt Doctor, and a leader in the research, education, and promotion of natural gardening. What would you like to know about the benefits of going organic? Join the conversation by calling 800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Howard, thank you so much for being with us today.
Good morning, Jill. How are you?
I am well. I am well. And yourself?
Well, it's been good here. We're a little warm, especially the humidity, but we're making it through. We've had a nice rainy beginning of the season and pretty cool. So it's a little different and pretty pleasant. Plants are enjoying it.
Wonderful. It's kind of opposite here. And for listeners who've probably already guessed, Howard's from the South, Texas, right?
How did you pick that up?
I'm pretty sharp that way. So tell us about your background, Howard. How did you start out as, how did you get to be an organic gardener? You didn't start out that way, did you?
No, not at all. I went to a school at Texas Tech. I went out to play golf on the golf team, wasn't very good, and got into what I thought I wanted to be a park person, and I took landscape architecture as a result of that curriculum. And the design course I fell in love with, and so I switched over to landscape design as my calling, and was in the landscape design business for a while here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And then my wife and I had our daughter after being married 15 years, and I was out one day on the front porch with her when she was just starting to walk, and she was doing what all kids do. She picked up things and put those things in her mouth.
Right.
And I said, I don't want to have any toxic chemicals around my little girl, and I started looking into it. At that point, I knew absolutely nothing about organic gardening. I just learned the typical synthetic fertilizers and toxic pesticides that were taught at universities, and by the way, are still taught there today. It's one of the reasons why we've set up our own online course teaching people how to do the natural organic program.
And I noticed that you use the phrase natural organic gardening. What does the natural part mean?
Well, we did that because of a couple of things. One is we wanted to have our own title, own label for what we did, because we didn't agree with some of the things that other people recommended and didn't recommend under the word organic. And we for sure didn't necessarily recommend the certified organic approach because of the red tape that's involved and the different states and the national program didn't jive exactly. So we just thought, well, we'll set up our own system and call it natural organic. And we avoided the problem of calling it organic and having to be under the federal standards, which we don't totally agree with.
Okay. And really, if you look at it, organic gardening as such, it's not really that, it's not old. It's fairly new, isn't it? So it's going to take a while for things to kind of fall in, isn't it?
Well, it's what Adam and Eve were doing.
Well, true.
Originally. Been going on since the beginning of time, but you're right. I'm from Pittsburgh, Texas, over in East Texas, and my family was in the sweet potato business and the fruit tree business. And back in those days, they used even more toxic stuff, a lot of arsenic products and things than we use today. But all of that chemical technology came out of World War II. The synthetic fertilizers, for example, were using the nitrates that used to be used to make bombs. And the chemical pesticides came out of, you know, other technology from the war. So it all the chemical stuff got started at that point. And it took over at the university level. It took over at the city level, at state and county levels and everything. And it has continued to be in control till today. And like I said, that's why we set up our own class. None of the major universities, none of the two-year universities teach this total organic approach that I teach.
Okay. Well, and you mentioned that your family had some fruit trees. We have a fruit trees. We have a caller who has a question about fruit trees. So let's go to Henry in Milwaukee. Hi, Henry.
Hello.
Hi, Henry.
Hey, so I've got a question about a fruit tree. We planted apple trees last year, and when they came back this year, the leaves are nice and rich green on the bottom, but then as they get towards the tip, it kind of fades into a, you know, a washed out green and then almost into like a silverish green, all within the same leaf and around most of the leaves of the tree. Wondering if that's some deficiency or what that problem might be and if it's problematic for the tree.
Well, it can be a nutrient deficiency, a trace mineral deficiency, and probably the way you're describing it, it is. I tell you, one of the most important and easy to do things that I recommend relates to fruit trees in general, and I think this would probably help you, and it'd be the first thing I would look at least if you haven't already done it. I have developed a program, a technique called the sick tree treatment, and it works better on fruit trees than any other tree, although it works on any kind of problems for any kind of trees. But fruit trees are notoriously planted too deep in the ground. The people buy them from the nurseries or the landscape contractor comes over, and they set the trees in the ground so that the little swelling at the base of the tree or the dog leg is right at ground level. Well, what that swelling or dog leg at the base of a fruit tree, any fruit tree is, most any fruit tree, that's the graft union. And as you probably know, the root system is a different tree than the top of the a plant. If you set that graft union right at the ground grade, it will have been planted about 8 to 10 inches too deep in the ground. When you plant a tree of any kind, and but especially fruit trees, too deep in the ground, and the flare is not showing, in other words, where the trunk starts flaring out to become the major roots, the tree's in stress, and that stress is what invites in the insects and the disease problems, and also parasites and things like mistletoe and sapsucker birds that poke holes in the trunks of trees and all that. This sick tree treatment will eliminate all those things. And the reason it does, it just releases the stress and allows the tree to have the natural power to resist all those things. If it is an insect or disease problem that's also involved, my pest control program starts with doing things that aren't spraying anything at all, just encouraging beneficial life, which is what the sick tree treatment does. And then step two, which I'd recommend you look into, would be to spray what I call garlic pepper tea. And garlic pepper tea is simply the juice from two bulbs of hot pepper and two bulbs of garlic. That's all it is. And it doesn't kill anything. It just repels, and it'll help repel. The garlic will repel insects and diseases, and the pepper repels insects. And then the next step, if that doesn't work, you go to the low-toxicity kinds of organic pest control products that kill, but they're low toxicity, things like orange oil and neem and hydrogen peroxide and things like that. So we start off using things that don't kill the beneficial insects or microorganisms at all, and then if we have to, we step up a little bit to more killing type of things, even though they're low toxicity.
Okay, well, thank you for that question, Henry, and good luck with that tree. Hopefully you can keep it going. We've had a lot of dry weather lately, and so a lot of our trees, especially those that have just been planted, are under some stress. So, yeah, good luck with that. You know, having healthy soil is the first step to a great garden. So what can we do to improve our soil, Howard?
Well, everything that I recommend, Jill, improves the health of the soil, starting with planting the tree at the right height, planting a tree in well-prepared beds that use the kind of bed preparation materials that I recommend, which are compost and then organic fertilizers. Then the second group is called rock minerals or rock powders, and they include things like lava sand and the commercial products like azomite and granite and green sand and things like that. And then the third category of soil building that we recommend are, I call sugars. They can also be called microbe stimulators because that's what they do. And in that category, my two favorite are molasses, dry molasses for the bed preparation, and then whole ground cornmeal, believe it or not. It's one of the most important tools that I recommend. And the reason is cornmeal stimulates a beneficial fungus called trichoderma. And this trichoderma fungus, it doesn't kill other pathogens. It just overpowers them because it is stimulated in the soil to grow on the roots of plants and just takes care of the pathogens without using any toxic chemicals at all. So every one of those ingredients I mentioned that are in my bed preparation, they're also in the sick tree treatment, by the way, but every one of those tools will build biological activity in the soil, microbes like bacteria and fungi and protozoa and beneficial nematodes and all of those things, and that's how you build the health of the soil. When somebody has really terrible soil starting out, there's a little shortcut trick I recommend to people too. When you're just starting, you have hard clay or you have a sandy soil that has no nutrition at all, any kind of bad soil, you can put hydrogen peroxide out, just the regular 3% stuff from the grocery store. I usually tell people to mix it 50-50 with water. It's just more cost-effective, and it works as well. And you spray it and or drench it into the area of soil that's really bad. And the hydrogen peroxide has almost an instant flocculating ability. In other words, a softening of the soil. You only do it one time. You don't keep doing it over and over and over because hydrogen peroxide, as you know, if you've cut your hand and put it on your hand, it kills bacteria. But when you use it one time on the soil, it starts that softening process, and it's just remarkable how it works. But I still then recommend that you do the compost and organic fertilizers and rock minerals and sugars. And by the way, the things that I don't recommend are important to understand, too. I don't recommend peat moss, like most people in the business do, and I don't recommend pine bark. Both of those things are antimicrobial. The pine bark works great on the trunk of a pine tree, but it's not good as a horticultural product to build the life in the soil. Same thing with peat moss. Peat moss, you know, we've found bodies that have been buried in peat moss bogs for centuries that are still in pretty good shape. We don't want that. We want things that encourage rot, encourage decay. That's how we build the beneficial life in the soil.
Okay. Well, we're talking about organic gardening with Howard Garrett, host of the radio show The Dirt Doctor. Join in the conversation by calling 800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Our on-air producer today is Jane Rotunda, and Tyler Ditter is our technical director. This is Garden Talk on the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. Join us every Friday or listen again on Saturday mornings at 6. And you can also go online and listen at any time. Coming up next week on Garden Talk, Vijay Pandian will be back to tell us why tomatoes aren't doing great this year and take your other gardening questions. Right now, we're talking about organic gardening. And we've got a caller that has something for us, Pam in Kellogg, Minnesota. Hi, Pam.
Good morning.
What information do you have for us?
Well, I just wanted to say that information about the soil was very good. My son lives in Wisconsin, and he has clay, and I'm always telling him what he needs to add. Well, that hydrogen peroxide sounds like a great product, and I want to try that on my sand also. So thank you for that. I've never heard that before. My comment is I've never heard this brought up, and this is for the frugal gardeners because this is a way to save a lot of money. When you have a a pot of petunias, you can just let the seeds go. And when the season is over, I just leave the plant in there, and I stick it actually in the corner outside in my house. So it'll snow on it, and it'll everything on it. And when spring comes, I start to water it, and I'll get little seedlings of petunias. I also have a large flower box that's full of marigolds, and I deadhead all summer long and leave them in there. And you would think they would rot, but come spring, I just break up all the dead plants, and I have little marigolds coming up everywhere. I divide and I divide and I divide, and I have so many marigolds, it's unbelievable. And they're all free.
Well, that's good. That's a technique I recommend. You're doing a good job.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for sharing that, Pam. We appreciate that. Now, Pam was just talking about containers, and lots of people have raised beds now. What are your suggestions for keeping that soil healthy?
Recommend exactly the same thing, Jill, that I recommend for beds and for turf areas and for commercial properties and everything. That same group of products, you just concentrate it a little more when you're dealing with the container plants. Most of the potting soils that are on the market are peat moss based, and so I recommend, in most cases, people can't find a compost based potting soil for containers as easily as they can peat moss. And I just tell people, that's fine, just add the compost and the rock minerals and the sugars to the regular regular potting soil, and you can make it better.
Okay. And we did get a couple more fruit tree questions here. We've got Jay in Fox Point, and he emailed that they have a Cortland apple tree that has what they believe is cedar rust fungal infection. What can they do to address the infection? They can't cut down the neighboring cedar trees. They're also having issues with squirrels removing the green apples from the tree and eating a few bites of them before abandoning the apples in the yard, which squirrels love to do. Do you have any suggestions for discouraging the squirrels from eating the apples?
Well, the squirrels are the toughest pest that I have in my garden, too.
Yeah.
They really are aggravating. And about the only thing that works for them, sometimes really hot pepper products will repel them for a while, but it's not consistent. It's sometimes you have to do like I recommend for mosquitoes, is spray something different each time so they never get used to it. For mosquitoes, and it'll sometimes work a little bit with the squirrels as well, we'll spray cedar oil one time, garlic oil the next time, oil of eucalyptus the next time. And for mosquitoes, we do the liquid BTI, which kills mosquitoes and fungus gnats and doesn't hurt beneficial insects or anything. The other thing for squirrels is just cover the plants with netting, which doesn't look good and it's a lot of trouble, but it's the one thing that will work pretty well. They tend to go to other plants if a plant's covered with a black netting.
Right, yeah. And what about the cedar rust fungus? Do you have that in Texas at all?
We do. Everybody that has plants in the apple family and cedars will have it. It's primarily a cosmetic problem and not hugely damaging. Because it's fungal, you can knock it out easily by using the cornmeal again. Cornmeal on the ground around the plants, and then also put about a cup full of whole ground cornmeal in a 5-gallon bucket of water and let it sit for a couple hours, stir it around, strain the solids out, and put the solids on the ground and spray the cornmeal juice on the plant, and it'll kill the fungus. It's pretty delicate as far as spraying and killing it. You can also kill it with hydrogen peroxide, like I mentioned before, mix the same way, 50-50 with water. There's a foliar feeding formula that I invented and has been used now for years and years, and it proved to be great. You can make it yourself with my formula on the dirtdoctor.com or buy a commercial product, either one. It's called Garrett Juice. And it's compost tea, liquid molasses, apple cider vinegar, and seaweed. And like I said, the formula is on the website. You go to dirtdoctor.com and click on the word guides that's down in the bottom half of the page. That's the button that takes you to all the formulas that I recommend and the basic programs and all that sort of thing. But if you mix the hydrogen peroxide into the Garrett juice or whatever you're using, the cornmeal tea or neem or whatever organic killing product you have to use, you can put it into the Garrett juice mixture ready to spray instead of water, and then you get foliar feeding benefit in addition to controlling the pest.
Okay. And we do have a link to your website on our website. So people can also go to WPR.org/Larry, and this program note will have that link also. You were talking about the cornmeal. Now, is that the same as corn gluten? Are those two interchangeable terms?
No, they're quite different. The cornmeal that I recommend for the disease control that we've been talking about is the whole kernel. It's the whole kernel ground up. In our part of the world, we have it available because I've been talking about it so much, and it's starting to become available in feed stores and farm stores and even garden centers around the rest of the country now. You can sometimes buy it in 40 or 50-pound bags, which is a lot cheaper than buying cornmeal at the grocery store, which would do the same thing, but you want the whole kernel, not just the cornmeal that's used to make cornbread, because that's usually just the starchy endosperm of the corn kernel. They strip the bran and the germ away in a lot of cases to make the cornbread material. But any kind of cornmeal works. It's pretty fascinating. It just stimulates that beneficial fungus called trichoderma is how it works.
Okay, because we did have someone who called last week on our show to ask about corn gluten, and
I didn't finish answering.
Haven't heard that before. And he's like, "Well, the dirt doctor says." I'm like, "Oh, we're going to have him on next week, so we will ask him." So, what does the corn gluten do?
Yeah, corn gluten meal is a completely different material. It is the protein fraction of corn meal, and it's kicked off as a byproduct in the manufacturing of high fructose corn syrup, which I hate, and corn starch and some other things. For years, they just fed it to pigs and other animals in feedlots and stuff. And then Iowa State discovered, it's one of the things that universities have done a good job at, organic, they discovered that corn gluten meal functioned as a natural pre-emergent weed control, especially in turf. You put it out in the spring and in the fall before the weed seed have germinated, and it functions just like a toxic chemical pre-emergent that I, of course, don't recommend, but it also functions as a very powerful organic fertilizer. It has an analysis of 10, close to 10-1-1. It'll usually say on the package 900, you know, the NPK,
mm-hmm.
but actually it's closer to 10-1-1. They always just put it a little lower so they don't get in trouble with inspections and stuff like that.
Okay, so is it just you broadcast it? Is that how?
You broadcast it just like an organic fertilizer at 20 pounds per 1,000 square feet or a little bit less. There's two different kinds of corn gluten meal. There's one that's just a meal, and it's the most effective because the particles are smaller in size. And so it's more effective, but if it's windy, it'll blow all over the place. And I've learned the hard way about it on some commercial products. I had some people weren't happy that I coated their cars with corn gluten meal dust. But it is also made as a granulated product, heavier particles, and it doesn't work quite as efficiently, but it's a lot easier and more pleasant to use.
Okay, great. Well, thank you for letting us know about that one. Let's go back to the phones. We have Ginny in Green Bay with a question. Hi, Ginny.
Hi.
Hi, Ginny.
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to ask you, what is your favorite for powdery mildew on roses?
Okay, there's a short answer to that and a longer one. The powdery mildew is also fungal. So the cornmeal juice tea that I was talking about will work. Hydrogen peroxide mixed in compost tea or the whole Garrett juice mixture will work. There are some commercial products out there that are essential oils that work pretty well. But the better answer is a more long-term thing. Roses are woody plants, and just like trees, roses have a flare at the bottom, whether they've been grafted or not. And a lot of times people plant the roses too deep in the ground. Some people think if they cover them, cover the flares up real high with soil and mulch, it protects them from the winter. And if you do that, it's okay. I wouldn't totally agree with that. But in the growing season, that needs to be pulled off, and that flare needs to be exposed, just like a tree's flare needs to be exposed. And then the rest of the sick tree treatment, compost, organic fertilizers, aerating the soil. And by the way, that's another use that I recommend for hydrogen peroxide, is to spray it as part of the sick tree treatment to help soften the soil. That helps all those organic amendments that we're putting out do their job better. And you can use the regular stuff from the grocery store, and people in the business can actually buy hydrogen peroxide in concentrated formulas, 27 to 35%, and you mix up those at only an ounce or a tablespoon to an ounce per gallon, and it's much more cost effective. Some are even labeled for disease control. But be careful, anybody using that strong hydrogen peroxide for the first time, at that concentrated level, it'll burn you, and it's really dangerous if you got it splashed in your eyes. Even though we recommend it highly, it needs to be handled carefully.
Okay. Well, thank you for that call, Jenny. Much appreciated. Now, Garrett, when you expose that flare with grafted plants, trees, do you then get a lot of the suckers coming up from the bottom? And if so, how do you control that?
Well, to be honest with you, it actually does the opposite. It's one of the techniques that you can use to stop the suckering from the base. Another thing that can stop the suckering from the base, I just did it on one of my own crepe myrtles. When crepe myrtles are grown in the fabric bags, they have a real fibrous root system going out. They don't have the big flares like they should have. And those plants and other varieties too, not just crepe myrtles, but other varieties will tend to sucker more if that's the case. And some plants just have the genetics that makes them sucker. You can trim the suckers off down to where they're connected, expose the flare, take the soil off, even if it creates a dish in the ground, and then when those suckers start to regrow, you can put concentrated vinegar. There's commercial products out there that are registered as organic herbicides that are 20%, or you can make the 10% vinegar formula that I have on my website under guides, like I was talking about before. And putting that harsh vinegar right on the base of the plant, it doesn't hurt the woody part of the plant at all, the tree or the shrub or whatever you're dealing with, but it will knock those suckers back, and I'm seeing evidence that you can even completely get rid of them coming back.
Wow, that's great. Our guest is Howard Garrett, the Dirt Doctor, we have open lines, so give us a call, 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. And we did get an email from Ellen in Cedarburg. She called. She couldn't stay on the line. She's desperate. Her squash garden area looks totally diseased. The leaves are yellow, gray, crisp, and dead. Is there anything that she can do to save it?
I can't bring plants back from the dead. That's one thing I can't help with. But if they're still doing okay, the two most common pests for squash and zucchini and some of the other related plants are squash bugs and squash vine borers. Now, you can help keep both of those away by using something that's high in silica. The commercial product called azomite is one of my favorites. It's available pretty much across the country, and it's a naturally mined material, real high in available silica. Even though silica is this very plentiful nutrient on Earth, it's not available. It's not in a bioavailable form for a lot of plants. So putting something out that has silica, some people report to me that they put out hair, human hair, chopped up fine and worked around the squash and zucchini plants and have great results from that. The spraying of garlic pepper tea, like I mentioned earlier, is a good repellent. The squash vine borer that gets in the stem and just turns it into a frazzled mess, the best technique to prevent that on the next crop, you may be already past the point this time, but is to go to the typical nursery will sell BT products, things like Dipel and Thuricide and Bio-Worm Kill. That's an organic insect control that kills caterpillars, you know, the insects, Lepidopterous insects. And you take a big syringe that you get from the feed store or hardware store or the drugstore, and you simply inject some BT into the stem of the plant when it first starts growing, and you'll never have the squash vine borer.
Okay, well, good luck, Ellen. If not this year, then maybe next year you'll have a good crop. Let's go back to the phones. Amy in New London. Hi, Amy. Amy, are you there?
Oh, yes.
Yes, what's your question?
We've never had pine sawfly in our area ever, never saw it. But 5 years ago, it started, and it's getting worse every year. I just don't seem to be able to get rid of them.
I'm sorry, what was the best?
I love plants and animals, and I don't want to spray an insecticide.
Right.
It was pine sawfly.
Oh, pine sawfly. Mm-hmm. Well, any of the pine pests, including the borers that are taking pines out other places, and the pine beetles and all those things, those are all related to stress. You got to understand that. That's a basic premise of everything we talk about. When you have a plant, especially a group of plants, it's real heavily invaded with disease or insect, there's a stress there due to something. A lot of the pines in the western part of the United States are due to drought. In your area, it could be something totally different. It could be too much water staying in the root system and an anaerobic situation getting started. You see what I mean? There's something that has caused stress in the plant. So the sick tree treatment, like I mentioned before, once again, is absolutely the best thing to do. And even if you use the sick tree treatment on a tree and it's already a little bit too far over the hill and it dies, you haven't wasted your money, because you will have improved the soil with organic conditioning for whatever else you try to grow in that space. So the sick tree treatment is the thing. One of the sprays that I use if I need to do a quick kill with organic, and it's a killing spray, is to use orange oil. It's technically delaminine. And orange oil can be mixed with water or with agaric juice or with fish and seaweed or anything that you want to use as a foliar spray at 2 ounces per gallon of water or gallon of whatever else you're using. And it will kill most insects. Now, that's a short-term fix. If you don't do the sick tree treatment, improve the soil into an organic, healthy condition, the pest, whatever it is, will probably come back.
Okay. Thank you, Amy, for that question. Next up, we have Christina in Glenwood City with a question. Hi, Christina.
Hi there. Thank you. I own an equestrian center. It's 13,000 square feet. And surrounding all the way around the building, I have the beautiful river rock, and we laid down the fabric. Well, it's like 12 years old now, and weeds are beginning to grow. Now, it's like 180 feet long, and the depth of the river rock would be 6 to 10 feet. So I don't want to use Roundup to kill weeds. Have you got any advice?
Well, you're very smart, because Roundup is one of the most dangerous chemicals still on the market out there, and a lot of people don't realize that yet, because it has been marketed so beautifully to be a safe product and to go away when it hits the ground and not hurt animals, and all that's untrue. We also have a nonprofit website called Texas Organic Research Center. .com. It's a 501c3, and in there we collect data about what I recommend and what I don't recommend and why, from a scientific and technical standpoint. And there's information, and a lot of information in there, about the dangers of Roundup. What I recommend instead, there's a couple of different choices. The one I use, and I just used it myself on some basalt gravel in my house, my walkway system, I'll use 20% vinegar, which is on the market, as I said earlier, as an organic herbicide. You can cut it down to 10% and add some molasses and add some a little bit of soap to it. That's my formula that's on the site. And for less amount of money, do the same kind of killing. And it's perfect to use in a gravel or rock situation like you have there.
And is that going to kill the roots, Howard? Or just
if
the top?
If you use the 20% stuff and really drench it down in there, it does a pretty good job of it. You sometimes have to spray more than once, but it is it's very effective. There's at killing them completely. There's another product on the market that we use down here in the South a lot, and I talk to people in the North about using it in bluegrass and fescue and turf, and it works almost as well in the cool season grasses. But in a rock, a gravel area like she's dealing with, like Christina's dealing with, you could use this product and I think get some really good results. It's called Agra Lawn Crabgrass Killer, A-G-R-A-L-A-W-N, Agra Lawn Crabgrass Killer. And believe it or not, its formula is baking soda and cinnamon. Cinnamon is a very, very powerful tool for us in a lot of situations. It'll help us control ants and various insects, repelling them, but it also helps us with some weed control as well.
I hadn't heard that for weed control. Excellent. Howard Garrett, the Dirt Doctor, is our guest on Garden Talk today. He's a leader in the research, education, and promotion of organic gardening. Join in with your questions at 800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. This is Garden Talk. I'm Jill Majeau. Join us again on Monday when we'll talk with one of our tech experts about selecting external speakers. And of course, answer your tech questions. That's Monday at 11 on the Ideas Network. But now we're talking about organic gardening, and we're going to go straight to the phones. We have Carol in McHenry, Illinois, with a question. Hi, Carol.
Hi, Jill. Hi. I have a red maple. I think it was like Autumn Blaze or something, but I planted two in the same soil by the same people from the same nursery. And the one that I'm having issues with, the leaves are turning prematurely red, like right after they leaf out, has a bunch of Tutani yews around it. And there used to be like 1.5 to 2 feet around the base. But, you know, as the years went by, it's been 20 years now, they filled in and they're right up to the bark of the maple, and the growth is real sparse on one side too. It's just not growing like the other one is. So is there something I can be doing to help this along?
Yes, there is. The first thing I'd recommend to you and other people listening, those hybrid maples, I'm not a huge fan of. They've been bred to have that real special fall color, but they also have very thin bark and they have a few other kind of weaknesses built into them. So next time, look at some of the more native choices, whether it's maples or other kind of trees native to your area. Of course, we have those here in Dallas where I am too, and I see common problems. Right now they're all looking kind of yellow and weak because of the 0-degree winter we had back in February, but they also tend to get sunburned. So look at the trunk, and if that's a problem, we can address that with what I call the tree trunk goop. That's a formula, another formula that's on my website. But I think in your case, I would very definitely pull the soil away from the base of the plant, dramatically expose the flare. And for the flare to be exposed properly, you can see, you know, good examples and bad examples on my website, but you need to be able to walk up and stand on the flare if it's exposed properly. It shouldn't be just flaring out a little bit. It should be flaring out all the way into a horizontal position. And if it creates a dish by doing that, that's fine. You might not like the way it looks, but the tree will love the way it feels. And that's the first step and the most important step of what I call the sick tree treatment. It's by far the most important thing that we recommend for trees, and I think it'll help you a lot with your hybrid tree there.
Okay, good luck, Carol. Thank you very much. Let's go to Bob in Hayward. He's got a question too. Hey, Bob.
I have a question about azalea sawflies. We have deciduous azaleas, and in the springtime, these sawflies will really skeletonize the leaves if I don't get after them. Now, I'm retired, so I have time to go out and squash each of these individually. Is it treat the soil so that the larvae or whatever they are don't come out in the spring, or what's the best thing to spray with after they're there?
Well, there's a couple things I'd recommend for you for your azaleas, Bob. The first thing is there's two living organisms, beneficial living organisms, I recommend for most everybody, whether you got a vegetable garden or azaleas or just landscaping or even just trees. And those two things are Trichogramma wasps. That's a microscopic beneficial wasp that helps control Lepidopterous pests, caterpillars, you know, moths and caterpillars. And the second thing is beneficial nematodes. The beneficial nematodes go in the ground and help you control soil-borne pests. And the Trichogramma wasp help take care of the things that are above the ground that are in the caterpillar category. The other thing I would do would be to put garlic out heavily. You can go sometimes to the big grocery stores and buy dry granulated garlic or in a powder form, and you can spread that dry garlic under the plants on the soil, work it in a little bit, till it in. Garlic has this enormous systemic power moving through the plant. There's a famous story that I've used a lot, and I've kind of spread it. There was a teacher wanted to teach the kids about systemic pesticides, and she got them to put a clove of garlic down in their shoe, in their sock, against the skin. And after a while, all the kids were smacking their lips and tasting garlic. And her point was showing how powerfully systemic pesticides were, but she also showed how powerfully systemic the garlic is. So the garlic will go into the plant and help repel pests you're having trouble with, and also other pests as well, and help with diseases also.
Thank you, Bob. Appreciate the question. Next up, we've got James in Wasaki. Hi, James.
Hi, how are you doing?
Well, what's your problem today?
We purchased some land, and it's 27 acres, mostly wooded. We have about 5 to 8 acres of heavy poison ivy, and I need to know how to get rid of that naturally.
I write a column for Dallas Morning News here in Dallas, and a few other people are starting to pick it up as well. And my last column and my next two are on vines. The first two are about the vines that I recommend, and the pretty ones with flowers and not a problem. And then the third column is going to be about vines that are problem weeds, and poison ivy is high up on that list. And whether it's Carolina snail seed or the other problem, you know, cat's claw is a problematic weed also, vine or poison ivy, the only way to get rid of that stuff, and there's a guy in your part of the world, I can't remember the name of his company for sure, but if you do a search on it, he specializes totally in controlling poison ivy. And what he recommends and what I recommend also is that you have to first physically remove it. And a lot of people can't do that because they're so allergic to it, but it's the only way to go. You've got to hire somebody to do it or some way physically remove it. And then as it starts to regrow, which it will try to do, of course, you spot spray the little shoots as it starts to try to regrow with the 20% vinegar or one of the other strong organic pesticides. But physical removal, I'm sorry to tell you, is really the only way to go. The toxic chemicals don't even kill it, and they contaminate the soil and all the other plants.
Or you could think about getting some goats, James.
Goats actually do work pretty well, too. Yeah. That, I should have said that myself.
Yeah, they do.
I totally agree.
Does that also go for things like Japanese knotweed that we have such an infestation in these in Wisconsin?
Yeah, the product I mentioned a minute ago, the Agrilon crabgrass killer, I'd try that on the knotweed as well. But physical removal, improving the soil and set up something growing that will be a competitor, that's, you know, long term, that's the best way to control most all of the noxious weeds.
Okay, great. Next up is Susie in Bailey's Harbor. Hi, Susie.
Hi. Hello.
Yes, what's your question?
I try to use organic fertilizer. I live in Wisconsin, and I buy a product called Milorganite. It's made by the city of Milwaukee, and it's supposed to be all eco-friendly and natural. Have you ever heard of it?
I've not only have heard of it, I've visited with the people there at their plant, and I'm very impressed with what they do. They do a great job on keeping the lake water clean and all kinds of good things. And I talked to them specifically about whether or not I should recommend it or not. They brought up the thing I have the biggest problem with when I talk to them. They can control heavy metals in the biosolids product, their product, and they can control pathogens in it without any problem at all. But what they have not, last time I talked to them, completely figured out how to control are the pharmaceuticals in the product. So what I tell people on Milorganite and other biosolids products is use them if you want to. We need to recycle that material, obviously, but it would be best to use it on landscape products instead of food crops.
Okay, great, and thank you for that. And I've got a question from a listener who emailed in. She said that she has asking you how to get rid of Japanese beetle grubs and when is the best time to treat them. We have lots of Japanese beetles eating lots of things this time of year. Do you have an answer for us, Howard?
Yes, the beneficial nematodes that I mentioned put out early in the year will help with that. You have Japanese beetles, doing it a couple of times a year is a good thing. They're not that expensive to do anyway, and they'll help you with a whole lot of other pests, not just grubs in the soil. If you have the beetles on your plants, actually feeding on your plant and doing damage, the best products are called, the active ingredient in them is called spinosad, S-P-I-N-O-S-A-D, spinosad or spinosad. And the one that's the best one on the market is actually made by a chemical company down here in the South. It's made by the Fertilone Company. They have an organic line of products called Natural Guard. And they have a Natural Guard product that's called Spinosad Soap. They've mixed the spinosad or spinosad with a insecticidal soap. And it is about the most killing, it's kind of the nuclear weapon of organic killing pesticides.
And what was that again? One more time.
It's called spinosad soap, and it's made by a company called Natural Guard.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you. And just before we break for news, tell us a little bit. We've got about a minute and a half. So tell us a little bit about all the stuff that you have on your website, because there's tons of it there. What can people find?
Well, I appreciate that. We have fun, and dirtdoctor.com is all spelled out, D-I-R-T-D-O-C-T-O-R. And on the home page, you'll find connections to all the stuff that we have. I think for your listeners, my best, who may have never heard of me before, the best first step for them might be to look up there in the top right-hand corner and click on the Fabulous Trees slideshow. And that's a slideshow that's long. It's 100-and-some slides, and it's photographs of how to plant trees properly, how to manage trees properly. This root flare exposure stuff I've been talking about is on there. And then it also covers specific trees around the world, some that I've been involved with and helped, and some I've just met. And one of them that's the most spectacular one's worth you seeing that I didn't have anything to do with other than going to visit it is the 3,000-year-old Montezuma cypress that's in Oaxaca, Mexico.
It's
price of the ticket, which is zero. It's free to look at it.
Yes.
And then you also will find connections to how to join our membership area, which is the Organic Club of America. It costs a little bit, but there's a bunch of benefits. The newsletter you can sign up for. It's totally free.
Okay.
And then the search box up at the top, you just type in anything you're looking for, and the search device on the website works pretty well.
Okay. Well, we've been talking about organic gardening with Howard Garrett, host of the radio show The Dirt Doctor. I'm Jill Nadeau, in for Larry Mueller. Stay with us. There's always more to come. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. I'm Jill Nadeau. With us today is Howard Garrett, the host of the nationally syndicated organic gardening talk show, The Dirt Doctor. He is a leader in the research, education, and promotion of natural gardening and the author of 15 books on organic gardening, landscaping, and pest control. What gardening questions are on your mind? Give us a call, 800-642-1234. Or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Now, Howard, we got an interesting email from Kelly. Apparently, they just started a small hemp farm to grow CBD. The field that they're using hasn't been tilled for more than 30 years, and the soil's on the heavy side, basically silt and clay. This year, they used an auger to dig holes for the hemp plants because they didn't have time to prepare the soil before the season began. But so far, the results have not been great. The plants are small and are showing signs of nutrient deficiencies. And they're wondering what you would recommend they do this year to prepare the field and improve the soil for next year's crop.
Well, that's an interesting question because a lot of people are getting into that business. In fact, we've consulted with other people getting into the hemp business. What has been done so far is damaging from two standpoints. One, the overall structure of the soil hasn't been improved, and then when you dig holes with an auger, you create a situation where the little tree, the little plant that starts to try to grow, hits the wall that auger created. It starts circling in the hole. So if she's going to continue to use those plants that have already been put in, the first step is to go through the area, if time allows, with a sharpshooter shovel, you know, a long narrow shovel or something like that, and destroy that smooth side of the hole that was created. And then the second step, which is more important than that long term, is to start adding the same amendments that we've been talking about today. Compost-based organic fertilizers, rock minerals like azomite and lava sand and things like that, and then the sugars like dry molasses and whole ground cornmeal. All of those things work beautifully with hemp, and the production will be very impressive, but you've got to get that soil, the strata of the top 10 inches, 8 inches of soil in much better shape, or you're not ever going to have much luck with the hemp. A lot of people think hemp, because it's marijuana related, is super easy to grow, and it is. But if you want to have a successful crop, you've got to have that healthy soil for that that root system to do its thing.
Okay, makes a lot of sense. Let's go back to the phones. Stephen in Eau Claire has a question. Hi, Stephen.
Hello. I used corn gluten meal in my yard and some natural fertilizer, and I had a patch of creeping Charlie between on the west side of my house, and that has been growing faster since then. And spreading.
It functions as a fertilizer, and it will do that. The creeping Charlie is one that if it were my garden, I would use my lawn. I would use the product I mentioned called AgriLawn Crabgrass Killer. The creeping Charlie is not coming back necessarily from just seed, and so the corn gluten meal only works to prevent seed germination of new plants. On existing plants and perennial plants, it functions as a very effective fertilizer, and that's what you're dealing with.
That's right. So creeping Charlie, should he be pulling that?
Yeah, you can if you don't like it. I don't mind the look of it myself. I have this conversation with people about dichondra and mosses and various kinds of things that I think look prettier, clovers, sometimes low-growing vetches. I think they look better than the lawn grasses, so I don't mind having some of that and some of it even mixed in with the turf. But if you want to get it out of the turf, that AgriLawn product and spot spraying with vinegar and other organic pest control products will work quite well.
Okay, I'm with you, Howard. I love creeping Charlie, and it blooms so early, and it's great for pollinators.
Yeah,
so
I think it's a pretty ground cover.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, sometimes you have to make peace with your enemy.
Yes.
We've got some lines open. If you've got a question for Howard Garrett, give us a call, 800-642-1234. And we have got Kathy next, and she's in Hiles. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My question is about volunteer redbud trees, and these trees are not in northern Wisconsin. They're in central Indiana. So we have a couple trees, ours and our neighbors, and we spend our summers in northern Wisconsin. In the fall, we go back. These things got away from us, and now we have several trees that, our only solution right now is to cut them back. I won't put chemicals. Is there anything that we can put on these redbud tree stumps to kill those massive roots?
You bet. So it's become a weedy little tree problem for you. What you need to do is use a couple of techniques. One is when you cut the tree down right at ground level, if it's big enough to do it, if it's a wide enough diameter stump, you can drill holes in the stump. If it's not, if it's smaller little trees that are coming up, which it sounds like might be the case with you, take a hammer and smash the little stump that's left there, and then go to the store. Garden centers will have a product called Weed Killer, and that a lot of people think, oh, that's going to be a chemical. But look at the label, and what you're looking for is potassium nitrate, which is saltpeter. And if you smash the little stump and then put a half a handful of the saltpeter right on top of the smashed stump, water it, put a little mulch over the top of it, in most cases it'll kill it. If it's a wide enough stump to drill holes in the stump, put the saltpeter in the holes. If you don't even want to use potassium nitrate, if you think that's too much of a chemical, it's basically it's used in gunpowder, but it's basically a fertilizer type product. If you don't want to use that, you can use molasses or any other sugar, and it will work not quite as fast, but almost as well.
Okay. Will that attract animals, using a sugar like that?
When you put sugar in one spot like that, it will tend to a little bit. When you broadcast it across the entire site, like we do here, y'all probably don't have fire ants like we do, but if you have any other kind of problematic ants, you can broadcast it, dry molasses, across the entire site, and it's very problematic for the ants. They get away from it because it stimulates so much biological activity, and it does not attract pests. Put in one spot like I'm talking about, it will tend to attract them a little bit to that one spot, but if you cover it with mulch, a shredded tree trimmings mulch is the best mulch to use for any use you have, whether it's vegetable gardens or landscape or whatever, the pests won't be a problem.
Okay, great. Thank you. And we did have a question from Leslie, actually two questions. She wants to know, does the Agrilon crabgrass killer work on Johnson grass? This is for her 20-acre farm site in Middle Tennessee. And how do you treat brown rot on plum trees for northern Wisconsin? She's tried everything organically and just can't seem to control it.
Okay. The Johnson grass, it will control the Johnson grass that's germinating from the little tiny black seed. The corn gluten meal will do it, and the little young plants as they're coming up that Agrilon, could think of the name again, the Agrilon product will work. But I tell you what works on Johnson grass that a lot of people are surprised about. Johnson grass cannot stand constant grazing or constant mowing. It'll kill it out. If you keep it mowed down low and you encourage other native grasses with organic fertilizers and things like that, it'll die out. The other grasses will outcompete it and get it. But the Agrilon product will help with the young plants. The corn gluten meal will help with the germination of the little black seed.
Okay. And her other question.
Brown rot.
Yeah.
Brown rot is a common fungal problem, and that same sick tree treatment that I've talked about several times is remarkably effective on fruit tree fungal problems. And people think, a lot of times, well, people call me about a tree that's in their orchard or whatever, some kind of fruit tree, and they'll say, well, I've got the flare exposed, but it's not working. I said, okay, let me see a picture of it. Send me a picture. 100% of the time, they send me a picture, and it's nowhere nearly exposed enough. So you need to dramatically expose it. I have a champion ginkgo tree now in my backyard that has outgrown trees that are twice its age in the backyard. And what I did for it was, it's where I discovered how important the dramatic exposure of the flare, the base of the tree, is to the health of the tree.
Okay. And I think I saw a picture on your website of that, didn't I?
It's on there, and it's in the Fabulous Tree slideshow, the whole story about it.
So. Okay, excellent. All right, well, we've got full lines, so let's go back to the phones. And Marty in Lake Geneva has a question for you. Hi, Marty.
Good afternoon, morning.
Afternoon works.
Thanks for taking my call. The last few years, our birch tree, a white birch tree, the gypsy moths really had a fun day with them. We had a bur oak adjacent to this, according to an arborist, it's about 125 years old. No indication whatsoever of gypsy moth infestation or dining on their leaves. Well, this year, it took out probably half of the leaves of this bur oak. There is nothing but these, I don't know, globs of light tan colored eggs all over the place. We spoke with an arborist weeks ago, and they said it's too late to do anything now. You're going to have to spray in the spring. Spray brings up all kinds of, you know, nasty thoughts in my head. And listening to your program today by chance, I'm wondering, is there something natural that we can do to alleviate this problem?
Yeah, Marty, there is. You can. There are pheromone products that are available on the market for the gypsy moth. I would look into that, study that a little bit, and on the timing of it and everything. And we don't deal with that one that much here in Dallas, but I know that the pheromone products are available out there. And then the moth, being a lepidopterous insect, is controllable with either spinosad, like I've been talking about for other issues, or with the BT products. The Bacillus thuringiensis is a biological pest control and works very well on the gypsy moth as well. Also, the Trichogramma wasp that I mentioned before that I recommend to everybody, it, one of the beneficials to put out in the spring, putting it out and then putting it out maybe a second or third time, depending on your budget and your time, will also help you with the gypsy moth.
Is he going to have a problem with that bur oak next year after this?
Well, if a bur oak is getting attacked by gypsy moth, it's probably in some stress. So, you know, same thing we've been talking with everybody. Look at that base. Everybody, including me, I had, you know, all my trees in my own gardens and some of my landscape projects that I designed from the past had trees too deep in the ground. We've all done it. The trees come to people from the growers to the garden centers too deep in the containers. And then the homeowner plants them level with the ground thinking that's right, and they settle a little bit, and they're even worse. The landscape contractors do the same. So we have to correct the problem all the way going back to the growers to really get this thing under control. But the bottom line for all of us right now today is that all of our trees are too deep in the ground. They're too deep in the container when we planted them, and they're too deep now. And you can't really hurt them by overexposing them. So look at the photographs on my website. You'll see what I've done on various trees. We've taken 10 feet of soil off of some trees, believe it or not, and had great success with them. There's a bur oak tree in Waco, Texas. The homeowners removed the soil themselves. They didn't even hire an arborist to do it. I told them how to do it. They did it with coffee cans and small tools over a period of time, and they literally took 10 feet of soil off the base of a tree, and it's doing beautifully today.
And that same goes for mulch around trees, too, because that causes lots of problems, doesn't
it? Mulch does the same damage that soil does, and these volcano-looking mulch things that a lot of people do. Houston, Texas is the worst for that kind of thing. But, yes, they're very, very destructive. We have helped consult with the national champion pecan tree that's here in Weatherford, Texas. And we use a tool commercially called the air spade. It's a beautiful tool that blows the soil out. And on that national champion tree, we took out 6 feet of soil on one side of the base and a foot on the other. And this tree is 850 years old. So it doesn't matter what the tree type is. Well, it can be roses and vines, any woody plant, or how old it is. The sick tree treatment is always going to help some, and if the flare is too deep in the ground, it's going to help a lot.
All right. Well, thank you for that, Marty. Next up, we've got Mark in Ironwood, Michigan. Hi, Mark. Mark, are you there?
Hey, Mark.
Hey, hello. Good morning. How are you?
Good. What's
well,
up?
It's good afternoon by now, I guess. Great. Hey, I have deer that love my lilies. I've sprayed them with liquid fence. Somebody told me there's some kind of crystals or something that you can use. Help. I would like to see my lilies all through the time that they bloom, not just when they bloom and then get eaten.
What kind of beasts are eating your lilies?
Deer.
Deer. Okay, there's a product line that's I don't have anything to do with them. In fact, I wish I did, but they it's a product line that works better than anything I've ever seen. I've even seen it used on large commercial multi-acre projects, and it's called Deer Scram. The entire line of products is called Scram, and they make products that are specific for deer and raccoon and armadillos and this pest and this pest, but the one that's called Deer Scram works better than any repellent I've ever seen. I'd recommend you give it a try.
And we have had a number of experts on the show who agree with you on that one, Howard. So,
oh, good.
Yep, definitely worth looking into. Thanks, Mark. Good luck. Next, we have Julie in Esko, Minnesota. Hi, Julie.
Hi.
What's up?
I have a question about blossom rot. All my tomatoes are getting it now.
Well, blossom rot is a fungal disease if it truly is blossom rot. The other thing about tomatoes that surprises people sometimes is that they don't get pollinated well enough and the blossoms will fall off, and that can be related whether it's blossom rot or not. And so I recommend the garlic pepper tea as a preventative to spray on the early plants. I recommend putting garlic, dry granulated garlic, on the soil around your tomato plants. And one thing that helps pollination, tomatoes aren't pollinated by honeybees. They're pollinated by vibration and wind primarily. And you can take an old tennis racket and literally whack the plant around from time to time. It actually causes a reaction in a plant to think, well, I need to set some fruit to protect my, you know, my young down the road, and it really works very, very well. Shake them real hard or literally beat them around with a cane or an old tennis racket.
And let your neighbors know, because otherwise they might call the authorities on you.
Right.
Thank you, Julie. Our next up is Catherine in Green Bay. Hi, Catherine. Catherine, are you there with us?
I am.
Okay, what's
Hello.
Up?
Hi, Catherine.
Mm-hmm. I have white flies on my eating my leaves on the decorative hawthorn thornless cockspur in my front yard.
Well, white flies are one of the tougher to control pests, but the garlic, again, sprayed as a liquid mixed with the hot pepper works best, but garlic by itself sprayed and also put in dry into the soil, whether it's pots or a bed, will help you quite a bit. And also, I usually get pretty good control when I do the orange oil, 2 ounces of orange oil per gallon of water or per gallon of, you know, whatever your foliar feeding spray is. That works pretty well. And the spinosad product will also help you with white flies.
Okay, thank you. And Howard, a lot of the things that you talked about today, are they readily available at a nursery, or is there stuff that we're going to have to maybe special order?
Well, it's a frustrating thing. A lot of the garden centers are not carrying a full line yet, even here in Texas where, you know, there are several of us into this organic thing. So you may have to encourage them to bring the things in. If any nurseries or garden centers or landscape contractors are interested in getting in this, they can contact us with the phone number that's on my website, and we can help set them up with distributors and things to get into what we're talking about here. It's a great niche for garden centers and feed stores and contractors to be into, and we're more than happy to help people go the right direction.
Great. Now, the minute we have left, what are just maybe the top two or three things that people can do to improve their garden and their landscape organically?
Well, I'd say the first thing is go to dirtdoctor.com. And at the top of the page, one thing that I didn't mention, the red button at the top of the page where it says buy books, art, and classes, that explains how you can buy my books and my art, my organic art that I do, and my online classes. One of them is about the sick tree treatment. And all the money goes to our nonprofit, the Texas Organic Research Center, and so you help support the mission of it and get good information for yourself. Main thing is to realize that the soil's got to be brought into a healthy state. And remember this one thing, too. The reason I recommend the organic program is not because of touchy-feely things or the environment or any of those things, which are important, and it does that, but the most important reason I recommend this stuff is that it works better than the toxic chemical approach.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Howard. This has been a pleasure talking with you. I hope you can come back and visit soon.
Jill, I've enjoyed it. Hope to do that.
Great. Bye-bye. We're talking with Howard Garrett, host of the nationally syndicated organic gardening talk show, The Dirt Doctor. And he's a leader in research, education, and promotion of natural gardening. Coming up next week on Garden Talk, Vijay Pandian will be back with us to talk about how to de-stress young and recently planted trees and take your gardening questions. I'm Jill Nadeau. Thanks for listening to the Ideas Network. Stay well and enjoy your weekend.